Chapter 58. After landing from his swim, Nostromo had scrambled up, all dripping, into the main quadrangle of the old fort, and there, amongst ruined bits of walls and rotting remnants of roofs and sheds, he had slept the day through. He had slept in the shadow of the mountains, in the white blaze of noon, in the stillness and solitude of that overgrown piece of land between the oval of the harbor and the spacious semicircle of the gulf. He lay as if dead. Arezzamuro, appearing like a tiny black speck in the blue, stooped, circling prudently with a stealthiness of flight startling in a bird of that great size. The shadow of his pearly white body, of his black-tipped wings, fell on the grass no more silently than he alighted himself on a hillock of rubbish within 3 yards of that man, lying as still as a corpse. The bird stretched his bare neck, craned his bald head, loathsome in the brilliance of varied coloring, with an air of voracious anxiety towards the promising stillness of that prostrate body. Then, sinking his head deeply into his soft plumage, he settled himself to wait. The first thing upon which Nostromo's eyes fell on waking was this patient watcher for the signs of death and corruption. When the man got up, the vulture hopped away in great, sidelong, fluttering jumps. He lingered for a while, morose and reluctant, before he rose, circling noiselessly with a sinister droop of beak and claws. Long after he had vanished, Nostromo, lifting his eyes up to the sky, muttered, "I am not dead yet." The capitas of the Sulaco cargadors had lived in splendor and publicity up to the very moment, as it were, when he took charge of the lighter containing the treasure of silver ingots. The last act he had performed in Sulaco was in complete harmony with his vanity, and as such perfectly genuine. He had given his last dollar to an old woman moaning with the grief and fatigue of a dismal search under the arch of the ancient gate. Performed in obscurity and without witnesses, it had still the characteristics of splendor and publicity, and was in strict keeping with his reputation. But this awakening in solitude, except for the watchful vulture, amongst the ruins of the fort, had no such characteristics. His first confused feeling was exactly this, that it was not in keeping. It was more like the end of things. The necessity of living concealed somehow, for God knows how long, which assailed him on his return to consciousness, made everything that had gone before 4 years appear vain and foolish, like a flattering dream come suddenly to an end. He climbed the crumbling slope of the rampart, and, putting aside the bushes, looked upon the harbor. He saw a couple of ships at anchor upon the sheet of water reflecting the last gleams of light, and Satillo's steamer moored to the jetty. And behind the pale long front of the custom house, there appeared the extent of the town like a grove of thick timber on the plain with a gateway in front, and the cupolas, towers, and miradors rising above the trees, all dark, as if surrendered already to the night. The thought that it was no longer open to him to ride through the streets, recognized by everyone, great and little, as he used to do every evening on his way, to play Monte in the posada of the Mexican Domingo, or to sit in the place of honor, listening to songs and looking at dances, made it appear to him as a town that had no existence. For a long time he gazed on, then let the parted bushes spring back, and, crossing over to the other side of the fort, surveyed the vaster emptiness of the great gulf. The Isabel stood out heavily upon the narrowing long band of red in the west, which gleamed low between their black shapes, and the Capitas thought of Decad alone there with the treasure. That man was the only one who cared, whether he fell into the hands of the Monterists or not, the Capitas reflected bitterly. And that merely would be an anxiety for his own sake. As to the rest, they neither knew nor cared. What he had heard Giorgio Viola say once was very true. Kings, ministers, aristocrats, the rich in general, kept the people in poverty and subjection. They kept them as they kept dogs, to fight and hunt for their service. The darkness of the sky had descended to the line of the horizon, enveloping the whole gulf, the islets, and the lover of Antonia alone with the treasure on the great Isabel. The Capitus, turning his back on these things invisible and existing, sat down and took his face between his fists. He felt the pinch of poverty for the first time in his life. To find himself without money after a run of bad luck at Monte in the low, smoky room of Domingo's Posada, where the fraternity of cargadors gambled, sang, and danced of an evening, to remain with empty pockets after a burst of public generosity to some Pandoro girl or other for whom he did not care, had none of the humiliation of destitution. He remained rich in glory and reputation. But since it was no longer possible for him to parade the streets of the town, and be hailed with respect in the usual haunts of his leisure, the sailor felt himself destitute indeed. His mouth was dry. It was dry with heavy sleep and extremely anxious thinking, as it had never been dry before. It may be said that Nostromo tasted the dust and ashes of the fruit of life into which he had bitten deeply in his hunger for praise. Without removing his head from between his fists, he tried to spit before him, phew, and muttered a curse upon the selfishness of all the rich people. Since everything seemed lost in Sulaco, and that was the feeling of his waking, the idea of leaving the country altogether had presented itself to Nostromo. At that thought he had seen, like the beginning of another dream, a vision of steep and tideless shores, with dark pines on the heights, and white houses low down near a very blue sea. He saw the quays of a big port, where the coasting feluccas, with their lateen sails outspread like motionless wings, enter gliding silently between the end of long moles of squared blocks, that project angularly towards each other, hugging a cluster of shipping to the superb bosom of a hill covered with palaces. He remembered these sights, not without some filial emotion, though he had been habitually and severely beaten as a boy on one of these feluccas by a short-necked, shaven Janice, with a deliberate and distrustful manner, who, he firmly believed, had cheated him out of his orphan's inheritance. But it is mercifully decreed that the evils of the past should appear but faintly in retrospect. Under the sense of loneliness, abandonment, and failure, the idea of return to these things appeared tolerable. But, what? Return? With bare feet and head, with one check shirt and a pair of cotton calzoneros for all worldly possessions? The renowned Capitus, his elbows on his knees and a fist dug into each cheek, laughed with self-derision, as he had spat with disgust, straight out before him into the night. The confused and intimate impressions of universal dissolution which beset a subjective nature at any strong check to its ruling passion had a bitterness approaching that of death itself. He was simple. He was as ready to become the prey of any belief, superstition, or desire as a child. The facts of his situation he could appreciate like a man with a distinct experience of the country. He saw them clearly. He was as if sobered after a long bout of intoxication. His fidelity had been taken advantage of. He had persuaded the body of cargadors to side with the Blancos against the rest of the people. He had had interviews with Don Jose. He had been made use of by Father Corbelin for negotiating with Hernandez. It was known that Don Martin Decad had admitted him to a sort of intimacy, so that he had been free of the offices of the Porvenir. All these things had flattered him in the usual way. What did he care about their politics? Nothing at all. And at the end of it all, Nostromo here, and Nostromo there. Where is Nostromo? Nostromo can do this and that work all day and ride all night. Behold, he found himself a marked Ribierist for any sort of vengeance. Camacho, for instance, would choose to take. Now the Montero party had, after all, mastered the town. The Europeans had given up. The Caballeros had given up. Don Martin had indeed explained it was only temporary, that he was going to bring Barrios to the rescue. Where was that now with Don Martin, whose ironic manner of talk had always made the Capitus feel vaguely uneasy, stranded on the Great Isabel? Everybody had given up. Even Don Carlos had given up. The hurried removal of the treasure out to sea meant nothing else than that. The Capitus de Cargadores, on a revulsion of subjectiveness, Exasperated almost to insanity, beheld all his world without faith and courage. He had been betrayed. With the boundless shadows of the sea behind him, out of his silence and immobility, facing the lofty shapes of the lower peaks crowded around the white, misty sheen of Higuerota, Nostromo laughed aloud again, sprang abruptly to his feet, and stood still. He must go. But where? There is no mistake. They keep us, and encourage us, as if we were dogs born to fight, and hunt for them. The Vecchio is right, he said, slowly and scathingly. He remembered old Giorgio taking his pipe out of his mouth, to throw these words over his shoulder at the cafe, full of engine drivers and fitters from the railway workshops. This image fixed his wavering purpose. He would try to find old Giorgio if he could. God knows what might have happened to him. He made a few steps, then stopped again, and shook his head. To the left and right, in front and behind him, the scrubby bush rustled mysteriously in the darkness. Teresa was right too, he added in a low tone touched with awe. He wondered whether she was dead in her anger with him or still alive. As if in answer to this thought, half of remorse and half of hope, with a soft flutter and oblique flight, a big owl, whose appalling cry colon yaacabo, yaacabo, it is finished. It is finished announces calamity and death in the popular belief, drifted vaguely like a large dark ball across his path. In the downfall of all the realities that made his force, he was affected by the superstition, and shuddered slightly. Signora Teresa must have died, then. It could mean nothing else. The cry of the ill-omened bird, the first sound he was to hear on his return, was a fitting welcome for his betrayed individuality. The unseen powers which he had offended, by refusing to bring a priest to a dying woman, were lifting up their voice against him. She was dead. With admirable and human consistency he referred everything to himself. As he had been a woman of good counsel always. And the bereaved old Giorgio remained stunned by his loss just as he was likely to require the advice of his sagacity. The blow would render the dreamy old man quite stupid for a time. As to Captain Mitchell, Nostromo, after the manner of trusted subordinates, considered him as a person fitted by education perhaps, to sign papers in an office, and to give orders, but otherwise of no use whatever, and something of a fool. The necessity of winding round his little finger, almost daily, the pompous and testy self-importance of the old seaman, had grown irksome with use to Nostromo. At first it had given him an inward satisfaction. But the necessity of overcoming small obstacles becomes wearisome to a self-confident personality as much by the certitude of success, as by the monotony of effort. He mistrusted his superior's proneness to fussy action. That old Englishman had no judgment, he said to himself. It was useless to suppose that, acquainted with the true state of the case, he would keep it to himself. He would talk of doing impracticable things. Nostromo feared him as one would fear saddling oneself with some persistent worry. He had no discretion. He would betray the treasure. And Nostromo had made up his mind that the treasure should not be betrayed. The word had fixed itself tenaciously in his intelligence. His imagination had seized upon the clear and simple notion of betrayal, to account for the dazed feeling of enlightenment, as to being done for, of having inadvertently gone out of his existence on an issue in which his personality had not been taken into account. A man betrayed is a man destroyed. Signora Teresa, may God have her soul, had been right. He had never been taken into account. Destroyed. Her white form sitting up out in bed, the falling black hair, the wide-browed suffering face raised to him, the anger of her denunciations appeared to him now majestic with the awfulness of inspiration and of death. For it was not for nothing that the evil bird had uttered its lamentable shriek over his head. She was dead, may God have her soul. Sharing in the anti-priestly freethought of the masses, his mind used the pious formula from the superficial force of habit, but with a deep-seated sincerity. The popular mind is incapable of skepticism. and that incapacity delivers their helpless strength to the wiles of swindlers, and to the pitiless enthusiasms of leaders inspired by visions of a high destiny. She was dead. But would God consent to receive her soul? As he had died without confession or absolution, because he had not been willing to spare her another moment of his time. His scorn of priests as priests remained. But after all, it was impossible to know whether what they affirmed was not true. Power, punishment, pardon, are simple and credible notions. The magnificent capitalistic cargaters, deprived of certain simple realities, such as the admiration of women, the adulation of men, the admired publicity of his life, was ready to feel the burden of sacrilegious guilt descend upon his shoulders. Bareheaded, in a thin shirt and drawers, he felt the lingering warmth of the fine sand under the soles of his feet. The narrow strand gleamed far ahead in a long curve, defining the outline of this wild side of the harbor. He flitted along the shore like a pursued shadow between the somber palm groves, and the sheet of water lying as still as death on his right hand. He strode with headlong haste in the silence and solitude, as though he had forgotten all prudence and caution. But he knew that on this side of the water he ran no risk of discovery. The only inhabitant was a lonely, silent, apathetic Indian in charge of the palmerias, who brought sometimes a load of coconuts to the town for sale. He lived without a woman in an open shed, with a perpetual fire of dry sticks smoldering near an old canoe lying bottom upon the beach. He could be easily avoided. The barking of the dogs about that man's ranch was the first thing that checked his speed. He had forgotten the dogs. He swerved sharply and plunged into the palm grove, as into a wilderness of columns in an immense hall, whose dense obscurity seemed to whisper and rustle faintly high above his head. He traversed it, entered a ravine, and climbed to the top of a steep ridge free of trees and bushes. From there, open and vague in the starlight, he saw the plain between the town and the harbor. In the woods above, some night bird made a strange drumming noise. Below, beyond the palmeria on the beach, the Indians' dogs continued to bark uproariously. He wondered what had upset them so much, and, peering down from his elevation, was surprised to detect unaccountable movements of the ground below, as if several oblong pieces of the plain had been in motion. Those dark, shifting patches, alternately catching and eluding the eye, altered their place always away from the harbor, with a suggestion of consecutive order and purpose. A light dawned upon him. It was a column of infantry on a night march towards the higher broken country at the foot of the hills. But he was too much in the dark about everything for wonder and speculation. The plain had resumed its shadowy immobility. He descended the ridge, and found himself in the open solitude, between the harbor and the town. Its spaciousness, extended indefinitely by an effect of obscurity, rendered more sensible his profound isolation. His pace became slower. No one waited for him. No one thought of him. No one expected or wished his return. Betrayed. Betrayed, he muttered to himself. No one cared. He might have been drowned by this time. No one would have cared unless, perhaps, the children, he thought to himself. But they were with the English signora, and not thinking of him at all. He wavered in his purpose of making straight for the Casa Viola. To what end? What could he expect there? His life seemed to fail him in all its details, even to the scornful reproaches of Teresa. He was aware painfully of his reluctance. Was it that remorse which as he had prophesied with, what he saw now, was her last breath? Meantime, he had deviated from the straight course, inclining by Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.